Welcome to Indie Business Radio for Monday, September 29, 2008. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Today's media partners are the 700-plus members of the Indie Beauty Network. The holidays are coming. Wouldn't you rather give the gift of American-made beauty, style, and indulgence? It's easy at IndieBeauty.com, where you can log on and click on our member directory to find wonderful products made by today's growing ranks of indie beauty business owners. You can even search in your own state so you can support your fellow business owners close by. That's IndieBeauty.com. Well, I'm back from a fabulous week in San Francisco to help Lori Nova of the Nova Studio lead a four-day boot camp for indie business owners. A special thanks to Wendy Y. Bailey of GroupMastery.com for doing such a great job hosting last week's show. It is so much fun to be able to conduct workshops and training and know that my show will go on. I have new travel opportunities coming up, so if you'd like to host a show in my absence, send me an email, info@IndieBusinessRadio.com, with your statement of interest and qualifications. Well, the Economic Stabilization Act of 2008 is winding its way to the president's desk. If you have some thoughts on the impact of this legislation on indie business owners, please visit my blog at indiebusinessblog.com to read my thoughts on the topic and also to share yours and join the discussion. While the corporate muckety-mucks are working with our congressional representatives to put out the fires they started, we still have indie businesses to run, and that means we need to constantly work to get the word out about our products and services. And here to help us do that today is Robert D. He is an award-winning writer and television producer-director and the author of How Come No One Knows About Us, The Ultimate Public Relations Guide with Tactics Anyone Can Use to Win High Visibility. Robert served for 7 years as the communications director at PBS, and also served as Director of Corporate Communications for Blackboard, Inc., an internet education and software company. Today, as founder and head of RDC Communications, Robert provides a wide range of media training services for business owners of all kinds. We'll take your questions and comments. Do join us, 800-773-0355, or you can email your question to info@indiebusinessradio.com. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Hey, Donna Maria, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's great to have you here. So tell us a little bit about your PR background. We got the high-level overview there, but you can offer a lot on the show. I want to familiarize my listeners with your qualifications before we get into the questions.
Sure, no, I'd be happy to. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on the show, and I'm very pleased. I've been looking forward to it, and I'm an indie business person myself, and so so this is particularly exciting for me. I'll tell you what my background has been in communications, both in public relations and journalism. For the last 25 years, I've been in a lot of different organizations doing public relations. I was at two divisions of America Online, and as you said, PBS, and I've been at a PR firm, and I was at Blackboard and a bunch of other places, and I was also a reporter for a number of years, and at a bunch of different publications. I ended up as a consumer reporter at U.S. News and World Report magazine in Washington, and and now I've had my own business for about 8 years, and I do consulting with companies that range anywhere from one or two people all the way up to Fortune 500 companies, and help them get more visibility in the marketplace. So that's what I do. That's what public relations. We'll get into some of the particulars, obviously, but that's what I do. That's been my background. It's a kind of a typical Washington D.C. kind of communication career, where on one side you're on PR, and the other side you're in journalism, and then sometimes people switch back and forth.
Well, and that describes exactly me and our audience today. We are the one or two people in a company that are switching back and forth and wearing all the hats. So, Rob, what is your definition of public relations?
Well, I think that good public relations, what it really is the ability to explain to your audiences not just what you are and not just what you do, but what you can do for them. I think it's very, very important that you separate yourself from your competition. If you're a real estate agent, or if you're an attorney or an accountant, there are millions of people who, or a public relations person like myself, there are millions of people who do what you do. So you need to find a way to separate yourself from the competition. And I think one of the best ways to do that is to explain exactly how you can help them do what they do. What they want to know is, I'm sorry, go ahead.
One of the things your book says, and I thought this was such a great quote to the beginning, your book says that a $4 cup of coffee in a paper cup is proof that PR works. Tell us what you mean by that.
Well, sure. I mean, 20 years ago, did you ever think that you would walk into a coffee shop and spend $4 on a cup of coffee in a paper cup? I mean, it never would have happened. And what Starbucks and some of their competitors sell, it's really not just coffee. What it is it's an entire environment. And they've done it through not only just product, but through word of mouth and through advertising and through public relations. I mean, it's the same as the bookstores. Did you ever think that the high-end bookstores like Borders and Barnes & Noble, those type of things would come back? I always thought the discount bookstores would be here forever, and that was it. But what they provide is they provide a community. People go in there, they set up their laptops, they get free Wi-Fi in some of these places, and they spend the day there, and they socialize, and I have meetings in Starbucks and Caribou Coffee and places like that all the time. So
this is a good example of what you said in terms of it's not just what we sell, it's how what we sell can help you.
Right. In other words, when you meet somebody at a networking event, when they say, oh, well, what is it you do, that's really not what they're asking. What they're asking is, what can you do for me? That's
okay.
What they're interested in. So it's the same thing with all public relations, is what you have to explain is, what can you do for me? That's what they really want to know.
So, Rob, when we take a look at public relations, I know one of the statements in your book says that Thomas Jefferson was the person to first use the term, oh, I don't know how many, 100 years ago, 200 years ago. So
yeah.
What did he mean, and how has the definition of public relations changed for us today in a new technology environment?
Well, I think let's take basic public relations, and then we'll talk about the technology environment. I think that one of the things that I have in my book, I have a whole chapter on this, is messages. And I think that before you go off and start sending press releases or doing anything else, what you have to do is you have to sit down and you have to determine what are the 5 or 6 messages that I want to get across every time I communicate, either on an informal basis or a formal basis. And let me tell you what I mean. Is if you do an interview like I'm doing right now, there's no point in doing it unless you have 5 or 6 things that you want your audience to remember. Okay? So it's fine to get quoted in the newspaper, but if that's not a call to action for your prospective clients or customers, then what's the point of doing it? It's just an exercise. So what you need to do is you need to establish 5 or 6 really good, solid messages that help explain exactly what you do and what you can do for your potential customer. And every single time you make an informal or formal communication, you need to put those in there, whether it's a presentation, whether it's an article that you write, whether it's an elevator speech at a networking meeting, whether it's stuff on your website. So that's the foundation for all communications, is a good set of messages. Then you know what to put in presentations and press releases and speeches, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and one of the things your book talks about is how you don't really have to reinvent the wheel. You say that a lot of this stuff is already in our offices and in our sort of knapsack of things that are available to us. So it's not as hard as some might think it would be if they're starting out trying to do their own PR.
Oh, sure. I mean, I think one of the most intimidating things that people find, especially as independents, is that they know they want to submit articles to their local business journals and all that other stuff, but it's very difficult to find the time to create all these fact sheets and all these other things. But, you know, somewhere you may, if you do presentations, then you've already written all that out there. If you work for an organization and they have a white paper, it's right there. There's a lot of good information. You can turn that into information for your website. You can turn that into a case study. You can turn it into an article for a business journal or a website. There's all kinds of things that you can do with it. So there's no point in reinventing that stuff. Once you've got some written material on hand, use it.
You also talk about how I've heard a lot of people say, Rob, you know, let's do some media outreach, let's get some PR. It's just like free advertising. And yeah. Tell us what you think about that. Is that a good mindset to approach this topic with?
Well, not really. I mean, there's no such thing as free media. Public relations is really earned media. Now, as opposed to paid media, I mean, advertising is paid media. You pay your check, you get exactly what you want in the paper or on the radio or wherever you're advertising. Earned media is a little tougher to get, but I think it's more credible. I think that if you get a mention in a magazine, let's say, if you get mentioned in that, which I think is a pretty good place, that's a huge amount of validity. If you have one of those stories written about you, better than it would be if you had, say, a half page ad in there. So you have to earn that place by being able to create a good story idea and be able to pitch that idea to the right reporters and get press. So it's work.
You talk about earning. It's funny because when I opened my first business, it was a retail store. I remember I had quit my job, you know, lock, stock, and barrel, just walked away, opened my store, and started in business. And one of the first days I was in business, I had to drive around the Beltway to collect some materials and supplies that I needed for the business. And I suddenly looked out the window and I thought, you know, I've been working in downtown Washington, D.C. for many years, and I looked around going, why are all these people on the Beltway? Don't these people have jobs? And it suddenly dawned on me that I had no plan to tell all these people who were driving around the Beltway, not at jobs all day, how to find my store. I had to establish myself and sort of, as you just described, I had to work to get the kind of credibility so that I could reach the media with my message. Is that kind of an example of what you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, that's what public relations really is. It's outreach. You're trying to reach all of your different audiences, and you're trying to reach them with the messages that they're going to respond to. So, you know, I always use the example of software companies. I mean, you worked in Washington. You know that there are hundreds of maybe thousands of software companies in this area. And frankly, one looks exactly like another until you kind of dig down a little deeper. So instead of saying, well, you know, we do custom software, if you can say, well, we do custom software for police departments across the United States and we help them process evidence 60% faster and help solve cases quicker and more, a higher percentage of cases solved, that's going to get the attention of police departments. Whereas if your only message is, well, we create custom software, that's, you know, everybody does that. That's what technology companies do. So you really have to be very specific with your various audiences, and you have to target them very specifically so they understand what it is you can do for them. When people ask me, what do? I don't say public relations. I mean, that's what I tell them that's what I am because they understand that in plain English. But what I do is I help companies create visibility for them to rise above the competition and be able to build a brand and that people will recognize. So when people need their kind of service, they'll be top of mind. That's what I do. And
when
I do
it. Say that, I'm emotionally attracted to that. So is that what you're saying? It has to go deeper than the surface and provide an emotional connection with the person who's hearing it?
Sure. I mean, you have to be able to resonate with them. What their pain points are, whatever their problems are, you have to be able to solve that. And you mentioned making an emotional connection. In the book, I talk about there are seven different ways to make an emotional connection with people, and I can go through those really quickly.
Let's do that after our first break because my intern is telling me we've got to take a quick break here. So that's what we're going to do, and we're going to come back with Rob's seven ways for you to make that emotional connection that you need to make with the people that are listening to you, telling them not just what you do, but how your services and products can benefit them. This is Indie Business Radio. I'm your host, Donna Maria. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. I'm Donna Maria, your host, and I'm here talking with Rob Day. He is the author of How Come No One Knows About Us, the ultimate public relations guide with tactics anyone can use to win high visibility. And before we took our break, Rob was beginning to list the seven things that we need to do to make an emotional connection with our target audience. Take it away, Rob. We need these seven things. Our pens and pencils are ready.
Okay. Thanks, Donna Marie. We're talking about making an emotional connection, and I think that, you know, people relate best to people. Well, all your clients are people themselves, and what they're looking for is they're looking for solutions that are going to work for them. And so I think to make an emotional connection, I found seven different ways to do that, and I'll list those for you. The first one is, can you help them fulfill their business or their mission? Okay, can you help them meet their goals? All right. So if you're working doing work for a federal agency, they have a mission, or a military outfit, they have a mission to accomplish. Can you help them do that? Because that's what they're interested in. They're not interested in what you are. They're interested in what you can do for them. The second one would be social life and lifestyle. Can you make their lives more enjoyable? That's what travel agents do. Travel agents don't sell boat trips. They don't sell airplane rides. What they sell is a sort of social lifestyle kind of a thing. That's what social networking groups do. That's what wine tastings are. That's what vineyards do. They don't just sell wine, but it's a lifestyle kind of thing. That's what restaurants do as well. Beliefs. Can you help them? Can you provide a place, either physical or virtual, where they can express their opinions? And Donna Marie, that's what you do. You have a radio show, and people call in. You have guests, and people call in, and they can express their beliefs on the topic of business. So you have provided a place, a virtual place, where people can go to do that. Town meetings are a specific, tangible place where you can do that. A fourth one would be reputation. Can you help people enhance or protect their reputations?
Mm-hmm.
Attorneys do that. If I was an attorney and you asked me what do I do, I don't just write contracts. I can have junior lawyers do that for me, and I can write the contracts and I can edit them and do all this kind of stuff. But that's not really what I do. What I do is I help. Depending on what kind of lawyer you are, I help people enhance or protect their reputations. Identity. Can you help people connect with others who share similar ethnic, racial, religious, geographic, or other traits, or traits that are completely different. There are different clubs. There are different social gatherings. There are different networking groups where people who either have a similar interest, like skiing or travel, can go to all be together and talk about the same sort of thing. Or you can go to a general social type of group, a general identity group, and meet people from all different walks of life. I mean, you had mentioned Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. is a melting pot of people from all over the world. So if you go to an event in Washington, D.C., chances are you're going to meet people of every ethnic and religious and geographic background that there is. Altruism. That's another one, the number six. And I think it's, can you help people feel good about themselves while helping others? And this, charities do, a lot of not-for-profits do.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, you know, you want to be able to sort of step outside of yourself and not just be working on your own professional and social life. Is you want to be able to help people. It makes people feel good, and it does a lot of good in the world. And the other one is fantasy and escape, and I mentioned travel agents. I mean, they're one of the types that do that. But look at Disney. Their entire corporation is based on fantasy and escape. Can you help people get up from mundane and routine things, at least temporarily? The movie industry is like that. The television is like that. Radio in some cases.
Let me ask you a question about that last one that you just mentioned. Is that sort of a good angle for companies that sell health and beauty lifestyle kind of products to approach it?
Sure. I think that, yeah, exactly. I mean, you're trying to improve the way you look. You're trying to improve the way you feel. You know, a yoga studio, cosmetics, all of those kind of things are fantasy escape. It's escape and fantasy sometimes sound like a negative. It sounds very sort of lightweight, but it's really not. I mean, all of us do things to be entertained, to look better, to feel better, and all of those things come under there. So if you sell a particular type of vitamin, you are selling improvement. It's your self-improvement, and which is, you know, in a way, it's an escape.
I heard a statistic that for every 1% the unemployment rate in the country increases, lipstick sales go up about $25 million. So, I mean, if that statistic is true, that's exactly what you're talking about in practice.
Yeah. But I think, you know, from a strictly business standpoint, I think the first one, the business mission is, can you help them meet their goals? What is, if you're an independent business person, and you meet somebody at a networking event, like I said, what they want to know is, how can you help me? So what you need to find out is, what's the problem? What's the issue they're having that you can help solve? And so you need to address that right away and tell them, well, here's what I do that can help you. So like I said, what I do is I tell people that I can give you more visibility in your market, which is going to help drive sales, or it's going to make people notice you more, and it's going to bring you top of mind using the news media and all kinds of other different methods that's going to help you be more successful. That's what I do.
Those are some great tips, and I've been taking notes. I hope you guys have too, but you know the audio download and stream is going to be available in a couple of days, so if you missed it, you can come back to indiebusinessradio.com and check it out. And while you're there, you can also click on the link to purchase Rob's book, How Come No One Knows About Us. So, Rob, here we are in 2008, and the world of public relations and traditional media outreach has changed a whole lot, even just in the past, you know, 3 or 4 years. What are some of your impressions about how those changes positively affect indie business owners, people that are wearing all the hats, doing everything themselves?
Sure. Well, let me say, first of all, that the basics of communications have not changed in the last 100 years. However, the tools all have changed, and especially in the last 10 years, they've changed drastically. So let me just reemphasize the basics, which are getting your messages down. Those are the basics. And when I talk to clients about going into, let's say, Web 2.0, which I think is what you're where you're going with this, what I tell them is first is before you start blogging, before you start doing all these other things, make sure you have your basics down. Are your messages correct? Do you have the right written materials together? Do you have a bio? Do you have an adequate website? It doesn't have to be great, but it just has to be something that you're not ashamed to send potential clients to. So the tools of public relations, there are many, many more available. I couldn't do my job these days without the Web 2.0 tools. You know, I do article marketing, and I can explain that. And I do. We all have websites. We all have. A lot of us do e-newsletters. I love doing that, and I love getting them if they're properly written. So there are a lot of tools. So that has changed drastically, and the opportunities for all of us to be able to reach press are just huge. You know, it used to be if you wanted to send out a press release, you had to have an army of young people with fax machines sending these things out. Now it's just a couple of email clicks and you're done.
Well, and I've heard several media representatives say, you know, fax. I mean, we've got one fax machine in our office of, you know, 50 reporters, and it's harder for me to find a fax than it is to just, you know, go through my email.
Well, you're absolutely right. But let's talk about two very, very different things. One is sending a letter in an envelope, and the other one is blogging, all right, just for sake of comparison. Now, you would think that email and blogging and those type of technologies have completely gotten rid of the need for doing, as we call, snail mail. But I can tell you that when you pick up your mail from the mailbox, if you get an envelope that has one piece of paper in it and it doesn't look like junk mail, that's going to be the first thing you open.
Right.
So I always tell people that sometimes, depending on who the audience is, you want to still stick with mail and postcards and that type of stuff. I mean, that, you know, that's direct mail. And I don't think that's out the window. But blogging, you wanted to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, and you know, what you just said, though, is really interesting. So I want to focus on it for just a couple minutes because I think that it points out something very important, and that is that as many technological tools as we have, sometimes, in some instances, you know, it does pay to invest the additional resources. So would you say, Rob, that if an indie business owner is just starting out and they really have a very small budget but they can afford to have a really nicely done, inexpensive blog, that one of the things they can do is kind of plan for the direct mail maybe to take place 6 or 8 months after the business launches. They'll have more to say. And do you think that's kind of a good way to think about just kind of budget it in for later on and not be overwhelmed with, oh, my gosh, I can't do it all right now?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, I think you can't start with all. When I talk to people about Web 2.0, I say you don't have to use every single tool in the shed. I think you can start off with blogs and with an e-newsletter. I'm very big on that, and those can be done very, very cheaply, the same as a blog. I think that.
Rob, why are you big on email newsletters? Let me tell you what I hear from some people.
Sure.
You know, number one, some people think or say that blogs have replaced newsletters. And number two, I hear people say that, you know, gee, how can I come up with content for my blog that's not just a repeat of what's in my newsletter? How do you deal with those kinds of issues?
Okay, well, I think that, first of all, the pluses and minuses of blogs. The pluses, of course, are that you have excellent content that people are going to want. People will subscribe to it if it's good enough, and if you promote it enough, people will get your blogs and they'll read them. The downside of it is, though, is you really have to pay attention to your blog just about at least every other day. The way Google search works, for example, is that it looks for fresh content. So if, you know, most people who are really active bloggers, they're blogging about 3 times a week. Probably. So if you're not willing to do that, if you don't either have enough to say or enough time to say it, then I'm not sure that I would do blogging. I'm not sure you're ready for that. Because if the last blog you did was a month ago and people find that, it's going to be pretty unimpressive. Whereas, and that's not taking away anything away from blogs, but you just have to understand, is that the right tool for you?
Right.
Now, the thing about e-newsletters is that I don't think one replaces the other necessarily. I think that an e-newsletter, for example, what I do is I send one out every month, and it covers just a computer screen. That's all. And it has three parts. The top part says, that's why you're getting this, because we may have met at some networking event, or you're a client or former client, et cetera, et cetera. The bottom of it has the, you know, about Rob D. paragraph, and that never changes. And then the middle is an article. So, for example, we just talked about seven different ways to make an emotional connection. All right, that would be an article. And so the only thing that changes is that little middle piece. The format doesn't change anything. So you can go online and find, there are a number of different companies, I can name a couple, that have templates, and you literally just cut and paste your stuff in there, and you put your email addresses on their website, and you just hit send, and you're done. And next month, you just copy the same one, and you put in a new article, and you're off and running. So I think they're both good, but you have to make sure that you have something to say and that you're going to keep after it regularly.
Okay, so consistency is definitely one of the keys.
Sure, sure.
Okay.
I mean, in my book, I just emphasize that there's not, you know, Web 2.0 is nothing to be afraid of. People are very intimidated by that, and they think that they have to start Twittering and doing RSS feeds, and I don't know if your audience, everybody knows what those are, but there's all kinds of different tools, but you just don't have to use all of them. You know, it's like if you're going to build a picture frame, the only thing you need is a little saw, a hammer, and a couple of nails. You don't need a giant, you know, buzz saw and all kinds of turning lathes and all kinds. You don't need that because that's not what you're building.
Good point. It sounds like what you need basically is a plan.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. And that's a really good point too about the commitment that blogging requires. And then on email newsletters, I guess in a way that could kind of dovetail with your point about using direct marketing, because I have found that while my particular email newsletter audience doesn't have this problem, sometimes the reject rate, if they're going to corporate offices, can be quite significant. So you can reach people with direct mail and not have to worry about that because of the firewalls they set up.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that direct mail and email newsletters they're similar in a couple of different ways. For example, with my e-newsletter, the best open rate I've ever had is about 35%.
After how long after the newsletter's gone out, just for the life of it? Because the open rate declined, right?
Three days. After about 3 or 4 days of sitting in somebody's inbox, they've either read it or they haven't.
Okay.
And then it's gone.
And you know, 35% is pretty good in 3 days.
Well, it is, you know, but that doesn't mean that they paid attention to it. That just means they open it, and it certainly doesn't mean they clicked through it necessarily. You know, with direct marketing.
Track that too with most email newsletters, right? You can track some of that activity using some of the services that provide the email newsletter service, right?
Sure. Yeah. I use Constant Contact, and I don't have any affiliation with them. I'm just strictly a customer, but I just happen to like that one. It's very simple to use. I'm not a technology guy, and I don't want to have to do a lot of HTML gymnastics. I just rather cut and paste my stuff so that, you know, that works, it works pretty well. I mean, in direct marketing, you know, a 35% open rate would be unheard of, or a response rate would be unheard of.
Right.
You know, 3% is closer to the mark.
Right.
There are two different mediums. One doesn't preclude another, but certainly email marketing is much, much cheaper than direct marketing.
Right. Great tips there on blogging, email newsletters, and marketing. We are going to come back after our final break and talk some more with Rob D., author of How Come No One Knows About Us. And we've got a question that was emailed in, so we're going to ask that one when we come back. This is Indie Business Radio. Don't touch that mouse. We've got lots more to share. We'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Indie Business Radio. We're talking with Rob D., author of How Come No One Knows About Us. And you know, Rob, over the weekend, I used Twitter to tell everybody that's following me about our show and how you were going to be sharing some great information and all about your book. I got a couple of responses, and it was so funny. One of them, you know, because I took a picture of the book where the guy on the cover is holding the megaphone and he's screaming.
Right.
And one of the comments I thought was kind of funny was like, you know, and remember, no matter how loud you yell, if you don't make me care, it won't make any difference.
Well, I have to tell you a funny story that when we were picking the picture for the book, the original picture that I wanted was, it was a picture, there's this incredible group of women out in California. They call themselves the Silver Wings. You have to look at these on Google. And they are wing walkers. They wear these red spandex suits, and they're wing walkers, and they're just incredible. So I found one of these wing walkers on a double biplane, standing on top, red smoke blowing out of the plane, and she was holding an American flag. And that's what I was going to put, How Come No One Knows About Us? You know, what exactly do we have to do around here to get attention?
Right, walk on airplanes.
Exactly. Like, what do we need to do, you know, besides taking off our clothes and walking naked down Main Street? What is it we actually have to do to get attention around here? You know, so we settled on the guy with the megaphone because it was easier to see from farther away.
It makes a good point. We have an email question here that was just sent in from someone who's listening to the show and can't get to the phone right now, and she wants to know about your suggestions, Rob, for capturing her target audience attention. She's an indie beauty business, so she manufactures cosmetics, and when she takes her products into various spas and retail outlets in her area, everybody's always just too busy, or they just don't, you know, they don't have time, or they're not interested, but this is oftentimes the buyer that's telling her that. So rather than, you know, settle for that, what are some suggestions that you can offer for her?
Oh, sure. I think this is a great one, and I hear this all the time from people. And this, where I think I would use an email newsletter for this, and here's how I would approach it. I would get the names of about five or six people at each of these places that she cannot get her meetings in, and the places she can get her meetings in. And what I would do is I would put together mail newsletter that is really short, but each one of them would have an article about something that is going to help them do their business better. In other words, she sells cosmetics. She's going into a spa. So what is it about cosmetics that will significant interest to the spa customers? Together a short newsletter and put them on the mailing list.
Mm-hmm.
Send those newsletters out, I'd say maybe every 3 weeks. But make sure it's not a promotional newsletter. Make sure that it has information that is really of value to them that they can read in 15 seconds. And what happens is over time, they will, A, they will recognize her name again. B, they will see her as an expert in doing the kinds of things that their customers are going to want.
Mm-hmm.
It's always going to bring money in the door when you make your customers happier. And three, help her sell products. But what it does, opens the door. Anytime you can create, you can portray yourself as an authority or an expert in something, that's going to open doors. You can, you know, they can unsubscribe to this anytime. I know you're supposed to get people's permission on a need newsletter,
yeah.
But you know what? Sometimes you just have to do it first, and you get the forgiveness later. They can unsubscribe.
So I would imagine that in this particular person's case, when she's standing there, if she can get a business card and jot it down, the chances are pretty low that the person's going to say, no, I will not subscribe to your newsletter if they know that if
right.
they're really, really not interested, they can just click a button and be off of it after the first issue.
Yeah, you know what I would do is, that's a very good point. What I would do is, if I was her, I would take one customer that she already has at, say, at a spa. And I would, it's somebody who really likes her and she can feel comfortable talking to, and write the first 10 articles and say, are these of interest to you? Do these turn you on? Would you read these and maybe remember them a little bit? So that's either yes or no. And if you get a positive response from that, then you can try a few and see what happens. But, you know, I have found that for myself, what happens, I send out a newsletter every month, and sometimes clients that I've worked with, say, 6 months ago, by this time they may have lost my contact information, but they have an email from me that's never more than a month old. So they can find me in a heartbeat. So if one of these spas decides, you know, we really should have a line of cosmetics in here. Now, where was that selling? Who was that? You've lost her business card. You can't remember her name. That email is in there, and it's not more than 30 days old. So that's pretty defined.
Right. You know, and another thing that what you're saying makes me think about, Robin, I'd like your thoughts on this, because we actually just got another question about this. How can you recommend some ways to increase interesting newsletter content? It occurs to me as you're talking that if that person that we were just talking about already has one customer, the content for that first newsletter could be a feature on that retail customer.
Exactly. It could be, but that feature still has to be helpful to all the other people reading it, because I don't necessarily want to read about one of my competitors in this newsletter, just how wonderful that competitor is. What I want to know is, what is that competitor doing that is particularly interesting and unusual? That's what I'm interested in.
So a focus, for example, on like maybe a photograph of that competitor's retail store and how they arrange their displays to entice customers to buy things.
Sure. How did they solve a particular problem?
With that one newsletter then, right, is you get those retail customers who didn't want to talk with you saying, gee, maybe if I'm a customer, she might feature me in her newsletter. And also you get to, as you say, solve a problem for them. And if you have any end customers, you know, the end users of the products, then they get to see how nicely your products look displayed somewhere, and maybe your customer gets a new retailer or spa customer as a result.
That's a great idea. I mean, what I would do is I would feature my product, and I would say, here's an article about the five products that are most successful in spas. I'm hoping that cosmetics is one of them. I don't know whether it is, because I don't know enough about spas to tell you that. But
as long as they're indie-made cosmetics, yes.
I'm sorry?
As long as they're indie-made, yes. Made by independent beauty companies, not some of the big ones.
Absolutely. There you go. And so so what I would do is, showing a display at a of your products would be great, and say, but don't just make it self-promotional. Say, this product works well this way, and here are five other things you ought to have in your lobby that are impulse purchases that people make when they go into a spa. I don't know if cosmetics are an impulse purchase or not. Sometimes they are, sometimes they're not.
Right.
But
but
that goes back to being able to tell a story. In my book, I say, if you only read one chapter in the book, it's this one. It's chapter 11. And it's, unfortunately, it's chapter 11. I don't know how it turned out that way. I shouldn't have let that happen. But chapter 11, it talks about being able to pitch a story. And so it's not just to traditional reporters, but it's to people with blogs. It's your own newsletter, understanding a good story. It's any kind of medium. So understand that people want to know things that can help them solve problems. They don't just want to hear about how wonderful you are every single month. That doesn't help you.
Well, by helping them solve a problem, you're showing your usefulness automatically.
Right. Right. So for this woman, for example, I would say that five things that the industry here's some new trends in what people are selling in spas. And maybe you've heard of some stuff that's going, maybe you're on the East Coast, you've heard about some stuff that's going on the West Coast that people here haven't heard about yet. That's a service. That's good information. Okay, because it could be a year before they would know that.
Well, you know, Rob, I'm going to share something that happened to us recently and kind of get your thoughts on this. We are dealing in the cosmetics industry now with some new legislation that may potentially impact the way cosmetics are regulated. So one of my members told a member of the media in her city about this new legislation, and they sent camera crews out to her facility to videotape her making her products, beautiful displays of her products on shelving units, and having her talk about this, the impact of this potential legislation on her. Is that a good example of how you can pitch an important story to the media? Because what they saw, the media saw some, you know, a reason to report on this new legislation, but my member, the cosmetics company, benefited greatly from media attention she wouldn't have otherwise gotten.
Yeah, I mean, what your listener did was she pitched a trend story and used herself as an example. That's perfect. I mean, especially for television. Television can't live without pictures. So you have to be able to show something, and, you know, factories and people making cosmetics and making cabinetry and all that stuff, that's television. You have to have pictures. So what she did was she pitched a trend. She said, here's this legislation, and here's what it's going to do for our industry if this passes or fails. And so they're interested in that, and they say, why don't you come out to the cosmetics factory and film it? You can interview me, and then I can also tell you three other people in the industry you really ought to be talking to. Obviously, don't give them your competitors. Give them the head of the trade association you belong to. Give them an attorney who deals with this, and then, of course, their local legislator who's the representative who's dealing with this issue.
So any small business legislation that may be happening, even if it's just in your municipality or your state, or, you know, municipalities and states are always tinkering with the legislation as it concerns, sales taxes and home-based businesses and what you can do and what you can't do. So these are some simple things that are publicly available in the newspaper, right, that you can pitch to a local reporter.
Sure. I mean, it all goes back to if you only have skill in public relations, it's not writing press releases. What it is, it's coming up with a good story idea. It's putting yourself in a reporter's place, coming up with a good story idea, and pitching it to the right reporter. Because what reporters, they don't care about us, and they don't care about our businesses. They care about stories about us and stories about our business. That's their stock in trade. And so if you call a reporter up and say, listen, I have a trend, and I know you cover this XYZ, and I have a trend that you may not have heard of before, and I see it happening, and here it is, and you're the first, you might be the first person to write about it. I guarantee you have at least a 75% chance of getting that story placed, because that is irresistible to any reporter.
Right, that's a really good point. So these are really excellent tips that anybody in any industry, beauty or not, can use to garner some media attention. So this is great, Rob. We are unfortunately out of time, if you can believe that, but I want to remind everybody that you can get Rob's book, How Come No One Knows About Us, at indiebusinessradio.com. There's also a link there directly to Rob's website. Why don't you give us your website address, Rob, and let us know how best to get in contact.
Sure. Sure. It's my website is rdccommunication.com.
Right.
And the book is available in all the major bookstores and on Amazon. And there are 23 chapters in there. Each of them covers a different point that independent and small business people can use to boost their visibility using public relations without spending a lot of money.
Wonderful, wonderful tips. Well, guys, this is the end of our time together with Rob, but you just heard how you can get his book, how you can get in touch with him. through his website. And I know if you're like me, this show has been jam-packed with useful information, and the book takes it a step further. Thanks for joining us, Rob.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed talking with you.
I am going to be delivering more great experts, more great shows to you over the course of the coming months. On October, what date is this? I think it's October 13th. I've got Karen Steed Terry. She is the author of Integrating Global Positioning into Your Website and also the author of Full-Time Woman, Part-Time Career. We are really interested in that. How do you balance being a full-time woman with a part-time business that you're running from your home? That's October 13th. We've got some other great guests coming up as well. Check out indiebusinessradio.com for all the details. And again, I invite you to join the conversation at indiebusinessblog.com, always talking about great tips and insights to help you be successful as you enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week, everyone.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.